Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Before we move on, it's important and necessary to pause and get some things clear. For the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about God's plan. We've been talking about answering the call for help, answering the call for love. And in order not to be confused, I want it to be clearly understood that what we've been discussing, especially in the current chapter, is, whether you've thought about it or not, the question of whether you're going to be honest, whether you're going to be honest. In other words, the subject has been each of you, not the one you would help. Now, all of you, in one way or another, as you go through your day, are trying to fulfill a concept you have of yourself. You have a goal for yourself. You have a certain thing you want to be in the world. And for the most part, you do everything you can to be consistent with the manifestation of that picture or concept you have of yourselves. And to be very blunt with you, when you're doing that, you're not being honest. Because a picture of who you are, a concept of who you are, what you want everyone else to see you as isn't you. You know, we can get all caught up in flowery, wonderful spiritual words, but if they're going to mean anything, they've got to relate to you and to where you are and to what is really true about you, so that you are able to abandon the pictures of yourselves that you're trying to present and can be yourself honestly. And so what we've been reading about, although it relates to your brother and your capacity to be an agent for change and to respond to a call for help, the focus has been on whether, before you respond, you've moved into a place of honesty within yourselves where you have abandoned concepts you have built up about the one who is calling for help. Are you coming from a place of innocence within you, which is another way of saying a place of genuineness in you, where you are not violating your own integrity, your own already existing absolute divine integrity, by inserting a picture of yourself between that and your brothers and sisters that you emphasize and thereby cover up who you genuinely are? Now, the ego will use everything that the Course says for its own purposes. and will use everything I say for its own purposes if you're not alert, if you're not honest, if you're not more interested in the truth than in anything else. And so when I say that you want to be able to come from a place of genuineness and honesty, I'm not talking about honestly expressing exactly what you feel. I'm not talking about how you, as an ego, as a concept, as a product of your families and your society's upbringing. I'm talking about something prior to that. I'm talking about something more fundamental than that. I'm talking about the integrity you have that is inseparable from you, that is, I'm going to say, at the root of the act of God that appears as you, as your experience of being conscious. You all know the truth. You all know the ultimate. But you think that you have to cooperate with everyone, and that everyone has to cooperate with you according to interpretations and definitions that all of you have made up together. Interpretations and definitions that allow you to create an image of yourself. But you know what? The image isn't what has created the image. You are what has created the image. But once having created the image and giving preference to it, that which made up the image fades into the background. And the image cooperates with all of the other images and abides by all of the structures and rules that all of these images have created together so that they can seem to exist in relative harmony. The honesty that is being called for here in the Course has to do with your being willing to abandon the image and the goals you have for that image so that you might get to the bottom line of you, where it's ultimately easy for you to express yourself without violating yourself, without abandoning your integrity. From that place, everything you say and everything you do will be constructive and will be healing. What you need to be clear on, so that you don't become confused, is that what we have been discussing so far in this chapter has nothing to do with anyone else. It has to do with the necessity of your doing something before you get involved in a healing fashion with someone else. And that is, get behind and underneath the images you're trying to portray. It also means abandoning concepts other people have of you. abandoning an intent you have to live up to another's expectations that fulfill their concept of you. Because as long as you're doing that, you are ingenuine, deceitful, dishonest. Because it's all a manipulative game and nothing more. And healing cannot be the result. And your awakening can't be the result. And your peace cannot be the result of that. And an even more remote form of this is where you are not trying to live up to a concept someone else has of you, where you're not trying to fulfill a concept someone else has of you, but where you're not trying to fulfill a concept someone else has of themselves. Now, what do I mean? I mean, for example, as a parent or a teacher, that you might have expectations of a child or a pupil. And that expectation of them is to fulfill your concept of yourself as a teacher, as a parent. You are relying upon your child or your pupil to provide proof of your value as a parent or a teacher. And if you're the child or if you're the student who is trying to fulfill your parents or your teachers' concept of themselves, you're even less honest, and you're even more confused, and you're even more buried in illusion. And what we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks has to do with stepping back, getting behind, getting underneath, all of that. So that you're coming from that place in you which puts up with no bullshit, because it itself isn't interested in bullshitting with everyone else. Even though all of you know how to do this real well and do it every day. So, when it says, the Course, that it's essential for you to see a call for help or a call for love as a call for love, even though the call for love comes forth as negative or abusive or unkind behavior, even though it apparently comes forth as attack, or comes forth as an invitation for you to become frightened on behalf of the one with the problem. When it says that you are to see it as a call for love instead of what it appears to be, instead of what the one calling for love hopes you will see it as, it means that it is essential for you, before you respond, to be unwilling to abandon your commitment to seeing them from where? From the bottom line, genuine honesty of your being, with a capital B. And I say that so that you might understand clearly that I'm talking about your coming from that place of divine excellence in you that is not confused, because it insists upon seeing nothing but the truth, God's truth, if you will, the real truth, and not be sucked into a judgment about that person that would interpret the call for help as something else, such as an act of aggression by an ungodly presence that doesn't deserve your respect. You see, we have been talking about the use you, as the one hearing the call for love, are putting your mind to, so that you might remain steadfastly anchored in your unwillingness to see anything other than the truth, even though you've been invited to see something else there and react to it. We have not as yet been talking about what happens after that. We have not yet been talking about how to be an agent for change. But how to use your mind so that what follows the right use of your mind can be that which heals, that which helps. So again, we have been emphasizing the necessity of honesty on your part. Now, because there is and has been so much emphasis in the last couple of weeks in what we've been reading on the call for love and the need to respond with love, and because it is so easy for the ego to twist the meaning of what's being said, we need to become clear on some other points. The first thing is, you must be willing to wonder what the words mean that we're using. A call for love. What does that mean? In practical terms, what is love? There's a call for love. In other words, unlovely behavior occurring, ignorant behavior occurring. And you say, oh, I can see she needs love. Oh, love is what's needed here with him. And then perhaps you sort of conjure up rosy, soft, pinkish feelings of softness and affection, and you sort of whirl it out around them and let it embrace them, and you consider them in this sweet fog of love. You know what? It's time for everybody to grow up spiritually or metaphysically. There was a day when everybody was thoroughly enjoying the statement, every day, in every way, I am getting better and better. And people walked around saying this like a mantra. And allowing themselves to embrace the feeling of that. But you know what? If you're not breaking the habits of bad behavior, and you're not changing, you can't get better and better just because you're saying, every day, every way, I am getting better and better. You can't get better if ignorance hasn't been replaced with understanding. You can't be getting better if you're still having the same old problems, but they're not bothering you like they used to. Let's not be caught up in spiritual vagueness. It's all relevant and it's all practical. Somebody says, well, you know, if so-and-so is behaving in this bad way and they don't want to accept the help that's being offered, they just need more love. Well, what in the hell does that mean? If you ask that person what that means, you're either going to get an honest answer that says, you know, I really don't know what that means. Or they're going to give you some of this soft pink, foggy, vague nonsense. If you want to know what a call for love means, change the word love to intelligence. It's a call for intelligence. Change the word to understanding. It's a call for understanding. It's a call for the one receiving the call to express intelligence where there has been confusion, an apparent lack of intelligence operating, so that the intelligence replaces the ignorance with that which is meaningful, with directions that are practical, that solve the problem, that bring about the necessary change from the behavior that was creating a bad experience into intelligent behavior that manifests as healing, as miracles, as problems disappearing. But oh, the word love is such a catchword for nebulous nonsense. Just wrap them up in love and hold them there in your mind. See their perfection. Bullshit. If you want to see their perfection, see it and then express it and make a demand for it to be expressed by them. Be the push, as it were, that motivates them to behave according to the perfection of themselves that hasn't gone anywhere, but which they've abandoned for whatever reason. And if you express intelligence in response to the call for intelligence / love, and they say, I won't have anything to do with it, then you express a little bit more intelligence / love, even though it's not sweet, nebulous, pink fluff. And you say, you know, if you're not willing to change the way you're thinking, if you're not willing to change your behavior, you are going to have exactly the experience you're having now that you're complaining about. I can't make that change in behavior for you. I cannot decide to abandon the uses you've put your mind to for you. But I can tell you that nothing is going to change until you do that. That's love. Because that's intelligence. And that doesn't take the power away from them. And it doesn't allow them to continue to think that something outside of their own decision to behave differently will solve their problem. And so you have been the presence of clarifying truth. Clarifying truth that doesn't mislead them in any way away from where the solution lies and what the solution is. Know the truth about them. Know the truth about them. Remember God's truth about them. And project it toward them and embrace them in it. Because minds are joined. Well, what kind of truth are you talking about projecting toward them? What kind of truth are you talking about embracing them in? If it isn't the truth that clearly points them to where the problem lies and how it can be corrected there, and that you can't do it for them, and therefore they must stop looking to you to do it for them, and they must stop blaming you for not doing it for them. And they must know that you're not fooled in any way into believing that you must somehow be able to do it. We just read last week that whether a brother is expressing love, which is real, or a call for love, you're only correct response can be appreciation. Oh boy, can the ego have fun with that? Because the one who's behaving badly and suffering from their bad behavior, that's their favorite song, that's their favorite mantra. If you would just accept me for who I am, if you would just appreciate me as I am. And so they glom on to that. The only appropriate response to them, whether they're making a call for love or an expression of love, is appreciation. But you see, this is where it can be confusing. If you don't understand that what we've been reading has to do only with you, the one standing in receipt of the call for love, and the necessity for you to be clear in your own mind, absent your own agendas for that person or that kind of person. Yes, appreciate your brother, whether they're expressing love or extending a call for love. Why? Because it provides you with the opportunity to reaffirm or confirm your willingness to only come from the bottom line honesty of your being. You appreciate them for the opportunity it provides you not to join them in their point of view through reaction or empathy, and to stay with the truth because, as I said last week, that is what constitutes your sanity. Not because that's what will heal them, but because that's what constitutes your sanity. And so, one appropriate response might be, you know what? I really appreciate the opportunity you're providing me by means of your bad behavior, your obtuse behavior, your attacking behavior, to be able to clearly say to you, your suffering is not because I'm not appreciating you as you are. Your suffering is not because you're not loved by me, which is a favorite refrain also. I appreciate you because you're giving me the opportunity to point out to you that you and you alone are responsible for the experience you're having by virtue of the choices you are making. And I can tell you that if you will make different choices, you will have a different experience. Oh, but I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not out of line. I'm not... You just have this poor concept of me. No. You are unemployed, aren't you? You seem at the present time to be unable to secure and keep unemployment because of habits and behaviors that you're choosing to practice and indulge in that make you unable to work together with others. You are not being able to support yourself. You are not being able to function constructively in your own life or with others. There is a reason for this, and I will tell you, because I know the truth about you, I will tell you that not to have these things is not your birthright. But you're going to have to be willing to look at the fact that what you're doing doesn't work, isn't constructive, and is increasing your despair. But this is work you have to do. That's the way you appreciate in action the opportunity provided to you by the one calling for help. It doesn't sound like nearly as much fun or joy as the soft cotton candy, vague atmosphere of loving thoughts and kindliness and affection that you would rather embrace them with. But you know what? At the bottom line, because you each have integrity, bottom line, actual, capital I integrity, all the time you're into this cotton candy, nebulous, formless embrace of loving thoughts is insincere because you have feelings that you can't get rid of entirely. And there is an indignance in you when you see a brother suffering. There is a knowing that it is not right. It is not truth. And you're overriding it in favor of some spiritual practice of nebulousness, loving nebulousness. You are being deceitful. You are moving into la-la land. You are not being grounded. Now, you know what? Truth is not licentious. Truth is truth. truth, for lack of better words, is white. In the sense that with truth, everything is black or white. Except that being truth, it's all white and there is no black. Truth does not allow for untruth. There is that which works and there is that which doesn't work. And which one works and which one doesn't work is not a matter of opinion. That which doesn't work never works, never will work. And as long as someone engages in what doesn't work, their life is going to be a void. And it is going to be an experience of stress and misery because they are attempting to do the impossible. When you are being honest, you know this, and you experience the freedom of being free of the susceptibility to the idea that what can't work might work. And in the absence of that susceptibility, you feel your strength, which simply means you feel integrated, cohesive, solid, immovable. Well, why don't you just appreciate me? I'm on my way home just like you are. And how dare you tell me that where I am on my path home is wrong? Truth is not licentious. Black is black and white is white. Do you realize that being on your way home can be a lifetime's career, like being a professional college student who just never finishes the learning process and thereby just never gets out into the living of life and the practicing of what's been learned? Be careful that you are not making a career of waking up, a career of progressing spiritually in your study of the Course. And I'll tell you something. The more you force yourself to force the Course to be relevant and practical, the shorter your trip home will be, because it will put you in the position of self-honesty. And it will help you abandon the bullshitting. And your abandoning the bullshitting will help others abandon it too. Now, this is something we've talked about before, but it needs to be reiterated because we are talking about the fact that the awakening process involves your breaking your isolation from the Father, but also from your brother. And so you seem to unavoidably have to relate to your brother, this brother who is either expressing love or call for love. those who are making a call for love make the call for love from two fundamental positions. One fundamental position is where they are suffering and they feel they're suffering and they do not want to suffer. And they're willing to abandon whatever it might be, whatever ignorance or confusion might be present that is supporting their suffering. These individuals, as a general rule, are not engaged in relating to others at the expense of the others they're relating to. The other fundamental requester for help is one who is engaging in sin. And again, what do I mean by the word sin? I mean that they are consciously engaged in relating to themselves or their brothers and sisters in a way that uses them at their expense, manipulates them, attempts to control them, and who will use whatever means they can, fear, threat, false promises. Sin is the expression of whatever tends to demoralize a brother or whatever tends to demoralize you. And the essential clincher of the definition of sin is that the one practicing it takes pleasure in engaging in this dynamic, such pleasure that they become committed to it. And it becomes the self-image they wish to reinforce, the picture they wish to present and substantiate in the world. In other words, they consciously take pleasure in and make commitment to doing that which disturbs or takes advantage of a brother at the brother's expense. Now, the first one is susceptible to healing. The first one will be able to hear the response of love, the response of intelligence that is provided to the call for love, the call for help, the call for healing. But the second one is not susceptible. And you must learn to distinguish the difference. Because if you're in a Pollyanna cotton candy spirituality that is just going to shower whoever comes to you, no matter what they do to you or how they behave, with appreciation, you're going to be mowed down. Because your naivety is not going to prepare you for lack of better words, the meanness of the mental state that is making the apparent call for help. You must learn to distinguish the difference so that you will come back to that request for help, that call for help, with the truth that I expressed earlier. What you are asking for, the help you are asking for, the request to get relief without changing your behavior is a request that cannot be fulfilled by anyone, not even God. And therefore, what you are inviting is to get me involved in an entanglement, a tug of war, and I'm not available for that because I know better. And you know what? I'm telling you that you know better. So, as long as you know better, stay away from me. And don't invite me into something that we both know I'm not going to play into. And you sit. You sit in your suffering. Unless you can find another patsy. Until you're tired of it. And are willing to be accountable to yourself. And look at the changes that need to be made. Accept the changes that need to be made and make them. And when you are ready to make the change, I'll be glad to talk to you. The call for love has been responded to as though it were a call for intelligence. And you have not lost your integrity. You have not abandoned your integrity. And you have not abandoned the bottom line divinity of you. It's said that everybody lives lives of quiet desperation. And in a way, everyone does, making the best of it. But you wouldn't be living lives of quiet desperation if you dared to be honest with yourselves, deeply connected with the truth that you know, and lived and expressed yourself from there. And that's what this chapter that we're in has been talking about. It's been talking about nothing else but arriving at a place of being honest within yourself by not relying upon the picture you have of yourself, the concept you have of yourself, or the concepts others have of you. Not trying to live up to them. But abandoning that struggle to be something other than what you are and giving up into what you are. Giving up into what you are is another way of saying turning to the Holy Spirit. You know, when you finally hit the bottom of the barrel and you actually give up, and the giving up is not another ploy, it's actual. Everything becomes utterly clear. You know what you can do and you know what you can't do. And you don't feel bad about it. You don't feel bad about what you can't do. And suddenly you're free to do what you can do. And because at that point you're in harmony with the bottom line of your capital B being, your life turns around. We're talking about becoming real. And the only answer there is for anyone else calling for help is to become real. And when one becomes real, when many become real, there aren't a bunch of different realities. There are not different realnesses. There's perfect harmony. There's perfect fitting together. Because the integrity of each one of you is the integrity of God. And then what happens? Well, you don't disappear. You don't get blended into some wholeness. But this genuine one that you are, this honest one that you are, who no longer has the energy to pretend to be anything else, finds himself or herself to be not in the movement of creation, but the movement of creation itself. Surfacing, if I may, bursting forth as you. And you have a gift to make that doesn't impinge upon anyone else, that doesn't depend upon anyone else's appreciation or acknowledgement, although it will be there. And your wholeness, the relief of the experience of your wholeness, consumes you, fills you full and overflowing, so that there is nothing else there. But what I'm trying to say to you is that that experience, rather than being some lifted up, lofty place, is something you find at what you currently call the bottom of your barrel, the place where you are forced by your innate intelligence to give up what is causing you suffering because you're too tired. You do not have the willingness or the energy to pursue what was causing your suffering any longer. The bottom line of you, the place of excellence in you, the Holy Spirit, is what is left at the bottom of the barrel when all the concepts you have laid upon yourself and all the concepts everyone else has laid upon you no longer tempt you to respond to them or to live up to them. It's the you are right now, at your most base, if I may put it that way, at your most fundamental, at this place in you of utter honesty, where there is no deceit any longer. Now, do you see how conscious you have to be? Do you see how unnebulous you need to be? Do you see how insane it is to become spiritually nebulous? Well, they just need more love. Love them more. Are you doing this? Are you doing that? No, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that because that's not going to help. I'm not going to give them more hugs. They want to be loved as they are. If I give them a hug, they will think I am accepting them as they are. Accepting them not as they truly are, but as they perceive themselves to be. Loving them as the collection of habits that they're engaged in. And saying, dear, you're all right. I love you with all of your bad habits. I love you even though you are trying to embezzle money from me. I love you even though you're stealing from me right under my nose. I love you even though every chance you get, you take advantage of me. I love you even though you get angry at me at the drop of a hat. I love you even though you say you do not want to hear any of the good I have to share with you, you see. I love you as you are, is what they want to hear, which means I am loved as I am, and therefore there is no call for change. And so you have confirmed their illusion to them, and you cannot call that love. You might be able to call it sweetness. But it is not love, because it does not call forth in them that which would uncover to them their freedom from suffering. The provision of love that is not the provision of intelligence as well is an expression of hate. Is an expression of hate. Because when a brother is suffering, and you do that which substantiates their suffering, what are you doing? You are engaging in consciously hurting them. And if you think that you can express love without intelligence, then you're joining on the side of destruction. You're joining on the side of unintelligence. Now, we could go on and on. Oh. But I don't want to make waves. If I do this, it will aggravate that person even more. Right. So be a silent accomplice. Right. And ignore the fact that while you're doing it, your ass is griped because you are going against your own integrity. You are going against what you know is right. And you are mad at yourself for dishonoring yourself. So it's much easier not to have to put forth the effort and the energy. It's much easier to get nebulously sweet and spiritual. Now, I know at one time or another all of you have felt the pull, the emotional pull. Of those who are addicted to their bad habits, of those who are addicted to their insistence upon doing what doesn't work, and who suffer in the process, and who seek consolation, who seek inspiration to feel better without having to change. And I know at one time or another you have felt the pull, whether you're in the presence of that individual or not. When you know that in the night they are wailing within themselves and reaching out with all their might for someone or something that will inspire them without their having to change. If you don't understand the difference between the two kinds of requests for help, if you are unwilling to recognize sin where it is being embodied or practiced, you will not know what to do when you experience the pull, the emotional and mental pull. And you will be inclined, because of your kindness, to try to help and engage energetically in seeing the truth about them, in helping them. And because the help that's wanted is that which will relieve them without them having to change what causes their suffering, you will not find an exit point from the experience of the pull. And so I'm going to tell everyone a very spiritual response when that kind of a call comes and you say it in your mind. Fuck off! I use the word very purposely because it's very difficult for anyone to misunderstand the meaning of those words. You must extend to them a clear message that you are not available for the invitation to an everlasting tug of war, an everlasting involvement of manipulation in which you are going to end up trying to extricate yourself because you do have enough common sense not to stay in it. You do not say it. Hopefully, you say it early enough that you do not end up saying it out of anger. But if you have to say it out of anger, say it with the force that comes with your anger. You say it so that it makes it utterly clear that you are not a good Mark, you are not an available patsy. That seeking help that won't help is useless with you. when this happens, I would, in very practical terms, suggest to you that you not engage immediately after that dismissal, becoming conscious of the truth about them. In other words, do not go into prayer on their behalf. You stay in the clarity of the dismissal from your presence of that which presents itself as something it is not. That you are not available for an interaction of deceit. And know within yourself that when they're ready for change, you will be happy to interact with them. You must be willing to slam the door in the face of deceit, and then, 5 minutes later, do not go to the door and open it up a crack and be curious to see if deceit is still waiting there for you. You dismiss them and stand in the substance of that dismissal, in the strength of that dismissal. Are you dismissing them? The real one that they are? No, you're dismissing deceit. And that which is identifying it itself entirely with deceit. And until the real one that is there who is employing deceit finds no payoff in the expression of deceit, the real one that's there will not show up at your door as a stray who really wants to change, who's hungry for change. I'm going to read the first paragraph that we were to cover tonight to end with, and next week we will begin with it again. I am not going to go into an explanation of it. Having taught you to accept only loving thoughts in others and to regard everything else as an appeal for help, He, the Holy Spirit, has taught you that fear is an appeal for help. This is what recognizing it really means. If you do not protect it, fear, by covering it up or calling it something else, He, the Holy Spirit, will reinterpret it. That is the ultimate value to you in learning to perceive attack as a call for love. We have learned surely that fear and attack are inevitably associated. If only attack produces fear, and if you see attack as the call for help that it is, the unreality of fear must dawn upon you. Mind you, once again, we are reading here about how the use you are putting your mind to, and how you stay at the bottom line integrity of you, how you choose to go for it, whether the use, whether attack is being used for the purpose of eliciting fear in you and causing you to be off balance and react, having lost your perspective. If only attack produces fear, and if you see attack as the call for help that it is, the unreality of fear must dawn upon you. For fear is a call for love, listen to this, in unconscious recognition of what has been denied. The fear that others express, fear as a means of controlling, is a call for love in unconscious recognition, where the person making the call for love, in unconscious recognition of what has been denied. The one calling for help employs it, employs fear, employs aggression, employs attack, in unconscious recognition of what has been denied. In other words, that one has arrived at a point where the something they are overlooking in themselves is registering with them enough to make them say, I don't deserve what I'm experiencing. But since they are still committed to it, their goals, they project the source of their emptiness out there and vent their feeling out there in their unwillingness to acknowledge that they are doing what doesn't work. So that they might change, they hold on to their right to continue to do what they're doing, believing that they ought to be able to do it without suffering, and therefore, what is causing their suffering can't be them, it must be you. It must be someone out there. And so when they extend it to you, when they direct their frustration out there, and it is really a call for love, this is when you must remember that a call for love is a call for intelligence. And this is when you must remember that if that one is committed to bad behavior, behavior that doesn't work, and they are getting pleasure and payoff in it, you cannot help. And you must shut the door as an expression of simple, utter intelligence, so that they find no payoff that continues to fuel their intent to proceed without changing. If someone is expressing fear as a result of an unconscious recognition within themselves of what they have been denying, do not relieve them of that unconscious recognition. With Pollyanna spirituality. And behave in a way that leaves them sitting clearly with what they are doing without being a distraction from it. That is responding to the call for love with love / intelligence. And you thereby will be being an active agent for change. I hope all of you have more of a desire to know the truth than to understand A Course in Miracles. You're here to serve truth, not a teaching. When you read the Course, don't just try to understand what it is saying. Desire to let it illuminate truth for you. And if you don't understand something in the Course, go to truth for the answer. Go to truth and say, what is the truth of what I'm reading here? Let the Course serve to point you to the truth. If you lost your copy of the Course and you were in a place where you couldn't obtain another copy for 5 years, you wouldn't be lost, because truth is available to you directly. Keep it clear that whatever books you read, if they are to serve you well, will point you in the direction of truth so that you might rely on it more completely. And I will tell you something. Truth with a capital T, God's truth, the essential reality of each and everything, is right in the middle of you, at the bottom line integrity of you. That's what is left after you have abandoned attempting to fulfill concepts. I love you. I love each of you for the inherent capacity you have to be honest. I look forward to being with you next week.